So, our topic is Intro to Git. That's not what you're here for. Well, hang out anyway. It'll be lots of fun. My name is Brian Vanini, and it's actually being hosted by Reliant Security. Thanks, Tom. And Tech Systems. Thanks, Mike. So, there we go. So, what is Git? Well, Git is a version control system. All right, that's cool. Seen that a lot on a lot of developer jobs, DevOps jobs. That's one of those common terms. It's one of the most popular ones, but certainly not the only one. Okay, well, that's great, but you need to answer my question. Because what is version control? It doesn't mean anything to me. Well, version control simply means just keeping track of the changes that you make to your files. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. It comes in three flavors. You have local version control. A local version control is not very effective at all, but the good news is it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to download anything, and you don't really have to do anything except rename a file with today's date, and then you make another change, and then you rename it today's date with an A at the end or a B at the end. You used to do that. One of the places I worked at, even worse, same file name, different folder names. So here's the problem with that. It's not really version control because how do you keep track of which one is the current one? It's very, very confusing. So this really doesn't work well for us. Then we have centralized version control systems. And there's a couple different flavors of that. And let me give you an example of what a version of centralized version control is. Got a book from the library. It's pretty good. I actually extended it. Unfortunately, I'm late. So I have to return it. I'll probably do that on the way home. But here's the thing. If you wanted this book, you can't get this book. Why? Because I have this book. And that's centralized version control. You check it out, just like the library. If you want to make changes to that file, you can't really do that until the person who had it checks it back in. So that's one possible problem. The other possible problem is, with a lot of the centralized version control systems, it's dependent upon a server and on you being able to connect to that server. Well, that's awesome when you're in the office, but what happens if you're flying, I don't know, to Disney World or something, or you're on a cruise and you get this idea that solves this problem, and you brought your laptop with you, and now you want to go make changes? Well, you can't really commit to those. You can't commit those changes because you don't have any internet. And I promise you, on a cruise, you don't want to pay for internet. It's not worth it. Okay? So, that centralized version control, yes, it works. It actually overcomes one of the problems that Git has that we'll talk about a little bit later. But it actually has some... I think it has more trouble than it's worth. Then we have distributed version control. Now, some examples of centralized version control would be CVS, not the pharmacy, but concurrent version system, and Subversion. So you might have seen Subversion or SVN in some of the job listings. Those are all examples of centralized version control. For distributed version control, that would be things like Git and Mercurial. We're going to talk about Git today. Distributed version control is better because while, yes, there can be a server involved, that server can go away, and it's not the end of the world. You can still make changes to it. In fact, if your server dies, it's an inconvenience because you can still continue to work. That code base lives on every developer's machine. So that makes it nice. Now, there's still a little bit of a wrinkle because you can't make changes that your teammates can get, not the way you're supposed to do it, but it's not a showstopper. So that's the nice thing about distributed version control. So here's a practical example of distributed version control. Visual aids. I have a few more. So this is a cheat sheet on Git. And come Monday, when you decide, I like this Git thing, that's pretty awesome, I want to use some of that, but I'm not available. Absolutely. But I'm not available, well, I'm the server. So it doesn't really matter that I'm not available. You still have a local copy of it. And in fact, you can do anything you want on that local copy of it. So that's the advantages of distributed version control, and that's what Git does. That's how it chooses to work. So what does Git actually do? Well, it creates a snapshot of your files. It keeps track of them. What kinds of files? Pretty much everything, but it really excels on text files. Can you do a Photoshop document or a JPEG? Yes, but Git is not going to tell you the changes that took place inside of it. Anything that's text-based, it does. It will show you, and we'll actually see that. It'll show you that this line got changed to this, and it'll tell you who did it, too. So for Teams, that's pretty awesome. The cool thing about Git is everything is local to your machine, unless you want to push it to a server. So even if you're not working in Teams, if you're doing any sort of development, Git is a very useful tool, especially since it's free. And one of the ways that it does, that it keeps track of these snapshots, is it does a SHA-1 checksum, which is about a 40-digit character. It's a hexadecimal value, and so it makes it very unique. We'll actually see what that looks like coming up. Okay, so there's three stages to working with Git, and it does sort of alter your workflow just a little bit. You have modified files, then you have stage files, and you have committed files. And that kind of works with the three sections of a Git project. When you set up your machine for Git, you set up your project to allow Git to start tracking it, you have a working directory. And then you have a staging area. Now that staging area sounds a little more complex than it actually is. The truth of the matter is, it doesn't stay there for very long, honestly. And then you have your repository. So that's the three sections of your Git project. Installing is pretty straightforward. The other nice thing about Git is it's cross-platform, so it doesn't matter what your development tool is, it's all the same. I have the exact same project for a tutorial book that I'm going through on Python, and I have it on my MacBook Pro here. I have it on a Ubuntu derivative called Elementary OS. It's very cool, by the way, very pretty. Loads really fast. And I have it on my Windows machine at work. So Git is completely cross-platform, doesn't matter what you're developing on. So that's pretty cool. But installation is really simple. If you're using a CentOS, Red Hat-based, it's going to be a yum install, Git core. If you're using an Ubuntu distribution, it would be apt-get install, Git core. For Mac, you can use Mac ports and do a port install Git core, or you can actually browse to Git's home address, git-scm.com, and go download the client for it. For Windows, it's a little different. It's msysgit.github.com. So lots of places to get it. Installation is really straightforward. There's not much to it. However, once you're finished with the install, there is two little pieces that you need to do, and we'll see why coming up shortly, and that is configuration. So there's two commands, git config, dash dash global user dot name, and then you put your name in quotes. And then you do the same thing for your email address. Now obviously if you're a sole developer, this doesn't really matter all that much. But if you're working in Teams, this is going to let your team know that you made these changes. And email address may not be quite so critical if everybody's in the same parent organization, even if you're split up. You know, like Reliance has got offices in New York as well as in Tallahassee. You could still probably get away without this, but if you do any sort of open source contributions, this is kind of important because somebody may have a question about exactly why you did this code this way, or they may have a way to optimize it, or they may not have thought of that. So this is kind of an important detail for the email address. But this is very simple, and by doing it as a global configuration option, not per project, you don't have to do it again. You do it right after you install Git, and then you're done. So that part's pretty simple. So installation is not much to it. All right. cruising along. I run across something I don't know how to do. How do you get help? Obviously, the first choice is Google. We love Google. It's awesome. But what if you're on a six-hour airplane ride or you're stuck in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on a cruise and you can't quite remember how to do something? Not a big deal. They've got offline help. Comes bundled in with Get. A couple of different versions of it. You can do Get Help and then whatever the command is that you need help on. You could flip it around and do Get whatever the command is, dash, dash, help. Or you could do the ever-present man, get, and then whatever it is that you're trying to do. One little goofy thing about that, though, is that if you do man, get, add, it's going to think about it and spin up for a little bit, and it's going to show you this neat little page. And it says, okay, well, here's what we're doing with this, and it tells you a little bit about Get, and then it tells you some of the options that you can do, and you can scroll down, and that's great. And okay, I found my answer now. How do I get out of this? Because I'm a Windows guy, and this development stuff is completely new to me. I've been there. Not there now, but I've been there. Cue to quit. And that will get you back to your command prompt. So that is one of the little gotchas. If you're not comfortable with the Linux Unix world and looking at some of this offline help, it'll kind of throw you for a loop. So that's one of the things that you'll want to remember. Cue to quit, easy peasy. All right. So we like this idea of Get. How do I get started? Well, there's two ways that you can get started with Get. Option number one, you have an existing folder. You got stuff already in it, you've been working on development, but you just haven't put any version control in place. That's okay, they've got a way for that. Option number two, you don't have anything at all, you're going to get a copy of that project, and the way you do it is by cloning. So if you have an existing folder already, you're going to initialize Git so that Git starts keeping track of things, then you're going to do a Git add. And that's not a speck on the wall, that's a period. It's a space period. And then you'll do a commit. The dash M is for message, and then you put whatever your message is. Now, you're not writing War and Peace here, so be descriptive, but be brief. As far as the, not really the syntax, maybe the protocol for this, it could vary. The place that I worked at that introduced me to Git made a point of having it be in present tense. And they had complete sentences. They had a period after each one of them. So it wasn't just a sentence fragment. So it would be change CSS file, period, not changed. I don't know if that's an industry standard or not, but whatever the protocol is for wherever you're working, you know, go with that. Make life simple. So that's pretty cool. If you don't have anything at all, you want to get started looking at somebody else's project, you can actually clone that repository if you know the address of it. So github.com is probably one of the most popular repositories for code. It's not the only one. It's not the only one that uses Git, but they are probably hands down the biggest. So both of these happen to live at GitHub. This guy, Venta, I guess that's his username, he's got something called awesome-python.git, and it's all sorts of little helpful tools related to Python. All right, so if you wanted to see what those were and gain access to them, you could clone it with this command here, git clone, and then the address. And if you're browsing around on github.com and you see something, there will be a spot over on the side where you can see here's the address to clone it. So you don't even have to type it in. This one here, Zed Shaw, is pretty popular in the Python world. He does the learn Python the hard way, meaning don't copy and paste anything, you type everything out. You drill it into your brain. You'll type more print statements than you ever thought humanly possible. But he's got something called Python-lust. Not to be confused with Penguin Lust, which 10 billion bonus points that don't matter if you get that reference. It actually stands for Python Little Unix Server Toolkit. So again, he's using Python to do some some administration. And he's got a select, you know, some tools over there that you can actually look at. So that's pretty cool. All right, well, we like this idea of GitHub. The only problem is, if I can see these files, so can everybody. And that's, I don't know that I'm comfortable with that. So how do I secure this? How do I lock this down? Well, there's a couple things to that. Option number one, you can build your own Git server, which I've done. I've got one set up at the house. And where I worked at last, we actually had our own sitting downstairs in the server rack. And nobody sees it unless you want them to. I opened mine up to the world. Ours at work was not. The only way you could get to it was internally. Option number two, if you're doing something, you got some sort of project brewing in your head, and you want to allow other people to contribute to it, you could pay GitHub and turn it into a private repository. And then you can control it, and then nobody could see it except the people who you've actually authorized. So that's the two ways that you can have a certain measure of security. However, even in the freebie plans where you're hosting stuff, they're on GitHub and the world can see it, they can't make changes to it. They can look at it, but they can't make changes to it. So you still have some measure of control. Our website for where I used to work at is actually hosted on GitHub, and you can see the source code. Well, that's okay. We don't have any database passwords in there, so it doesn't matter. So it works pretty well. So that's the nice thing about that. Our workflow. We've got Git on the machine. We've decided we like it. How does this alter my workflow? Well, if you're using branches, if you're at that stage where you're using different branches, the very first step is make sure you are on the correct branch, because nothing sucks worse than making a whole bunch of changes and then realize you've been on the wrong branch the whole time. That is not a lot of fun. Ask me how I know this. Make changes to your code. You do have to save the changes. Yes, Git's going to keep track of the changes, but you still have to save. I know it's kind of obvious, but there you go. You add the files to your staging area. Again, that staging area step is really short. Odds are strong you'll never sit there and hover over that section. It's there for just a blip. Then you're going to commit the changes. Now all of your changes are out of the staging area, and they've made it into your local repository. If you're working with branches, then what you may do is merge your development branch in with your master branch. So what belongs in master branch? Working code. That's the only thing that belongs in your master branch, is working code. It's okay to have something that's broken in your development branch because it's only on your machine. Some problems take more than a business day to fix. It just kind of works that way. So once you've got working code and you've tested it, because we do testing, you merge it in with your master branch, and then if you have a remote repository, so you want your team to go check it out for code review, or maybe they need those changes for something else, then you push those changes to your remote repository. So that's the workflow. You're going, wow, that's six steps. That's an awful lot of stuff. Yes, it is. But it's all pretty short, and once you get used to it, it's not that big of a deal. So I started this project with something for Eloquent JavaScript version 2. They got an online version of it. It's an excellent book, by the way, for learning JavaScript. So I created a file here called index.htm so I could start playing with it. And I did a git init to tell Git to start tracking changes to this file, to this folder. And what it did is it spit this back and said initialize into Git repository. And then it listed the path. And what it did is inside of that folder, it made a hidden folder called .git. And that's where all of my changes, all those SHA-1 checksums are going to go. If you want to see what's going on, you type in git status. So when I do that, after initializing it, says, okay, you're on your master branch, so it gets really smart. It'll tell you what branch you're on a lot of times. It'll say you've got untracked files. Here's my untracked files. I had my index.htm. I had this chapter 2 exercise A JS file here. And it's pretty nice because it'll actually tell you, if you, because these are untracked, if you want to include this in the commit, here's how you do it. Do git add the file. Wow. Okay, awesome. That's cool. All right. And it didn't even tell you here again. Nothing's added to the commit, but I do have some untracked files, and here's how to put them in. So git is very, very helpful. When you do that and go, okay, I want to do a git add, you can do git add and each individual file name, and that sounds great when it's two files and horrible when it's 200. So the shortcut way to this is a space and a period. Now what that period means is add everything in this directory and every subdirectory below it. That's important because if you're deep in something somewhere else down here and you've made some changes and that's where you're currently at, and you do a git add space period, but you had changes a little bit further up in the tree, it yells at you about that. Learn that the hard way too. Scooch all the way back up to the top, and then this will work just fine. So that's what that period means, but it's a very quick way to do that. You can specify particular files if somebody needs something and needs it right now. So you can do that. That's not a problem. But this, honestly, is the shortest way to do that. Then you do a git status. Again, you're going to do that a lot. I'm just going to tell you now, you're going to do git status quite a bit. This time, though, it's changed because now it'll tell you, I've got these changes to be committed. I've got two new files. All right. Cool. This is the staging area. We haven't actually committed this yet. We just told git to add it, so it adds to the staging area. And if you decide, whoa, wait, I didn't mean that one, it even tells you how to get rid of it and unstage it. Again, very, very helpful. These are all screenshots of what I had on in my terminal when I was doing this. Then we're ready to commit it. We're happy with our changes, our code works, life is good. We're going to do a git commit, minus m, and then 9 times out of 10, your first commit message is going to be something along the lines of initial commit. Just sort of works that way. Doesn't matter what it is, you just want something that's descriptive. At this point, it says, okay, I've got two files that are changed, and it created them. But look at what else it did. This is the first part of that 40-character hexadecimal SHA-1 checksum right here. And we'll see this again. We'll see this in the log, and we'll see this with another graphical utility. And sometimes we need this. If we need to do a revert because we screwed up, we need this. So it's kind of nice that it actually tells you what that is. If you do another git status, like I said, you're going to do that one about 9 million times. It says, you're on your master branch. All right, good deal. You have nothing to commit. Your working directory is clean. That means you have not changed any files. You haven't made any changes. And that's generally where you want to be. Everything is stable. Your working directory matches your staging, matches your repo. Everything is all at the same level. So that's kind of what we're shooting for. How often do you do this? If you have to change, I don't know, 15 HTML files to go change a phone number, I would not do this after each change. Because you're going to have 9,000 commit messages, and your boss is probably going to yell at you, and rightfully so. But any sort of major change that you do, this is sort of the same rules as how often do you save, how much work do you want to redo? Because if you make a mistake and you revert back to undo this change, how much of that are you going to have to redo? How much can you live with? So that's kind of the idea. And this just sort of comes with experience. But basically, any major change that takes place, that's probably the time to commit. All right, so you make changes and you repeat. So I made another change. And when I do a git status, this time it says, okay, I know about this file, I'm keeping track of it, but you've modified it. So it's smart enough to tell you that you've made changes to it. It knows that you made a change. And I'm talking, you hit the space bar and you hit save. That's a change. It's a stupid change, but it's a change. So it pays attention. All right, how do I see my changes? Git's keeping track of it. It's kind of like Big Brother, but how do I see them? We have two ways to do this. The terminal way is git log, and the graphical way is something called git k space dash dash all. The two dashes are kind of important. If you do a git k dash all, it doesn't really work right. Doesn't break, but it doesn't really work right. This may, depending on your OS, may need a separate install. I think I had to do a separate install of that for my Mac. On Linux, it didn't require it, and I think Windows didn't require it either. But it may require that. So, let's see what that looks like. Here we go. So, let's go to Terminal, and we're going to... Where are we going? We are going right here. So, I can do a git log, and it's going to show me all sorts of things. Every change that's ever taken place on this. Yeah, pretty much all of them. I only want to see the last 5. I only want to see the last 10. All right. Didn't give me my terminal back. Cue to quit. All right, so if I do a git log dash 5, it's going to show me just the last 5 changes. So that's pretty cool. Here's the interesting thing. Remember that 40 character SHA-1? There it is right here.
That's unique every time?
It's unique every single time. It's hexadecimal, so it's got 16 possible values times 40 characters. Yes, it's pretty much unique. It shows you who did it. Remember the git global config? That's why. So it'll tell you who the person is, what their email address is. It'll tell you the date and timestamp that they did it. And then this is the commit message. So again, be brief, but be descriptive. So that's one way to do it. That's pretty cool. Let's go clear. The other way to do it is git k all. I'm just going to think about it for a second.
Is this all of the changes?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's going to... I don't know why it's spinning on that. Come on. No, apparently it doesn't look like...
Maybe it's calling you display
something. No, it usually pops up. Oh, yeah, it did. Sure enough. Okay, so here we go. So now we have a graphical view of this, and this is very cool because right here, there we go. Okay, this is it's the projector is bad. On screen, it's a very light gray. This says SHA-1 ID, but it shows you that ID, which, like I said, you may need if you want to do a revert. The good news is you don't need the whole 40 characters. You just need the first 6 or 7 at the beginning, because that's unique enough that it can find what it is. So you can actually get that from here. So that's cool. That's kind of cool. And this shows fixed conflicted copy issue. This is same thing. This is a stash, a Stack Overflow text. So it shows you a lot of neat things. Same thing as the log does. Here's who did it. Here's their email address. Here's the date and time they did it. But something that git log doesn't show you that this does, is it shows you what they actually did. And that's really cool. So if you have a minus sign out here and it's red, this was what it used to be, and the plus sign in green is what you changed it to. So this is kind of useful. There is one little snag with this, though. And that is, if I go back to my terminal and I want to do a git commit or git status, nothing really happens until you close out of git kall. It doesn't return your terminal back to you. And this is true across all three platforms. I actually tested it. So if you want to get your terminal back, you know, you look at what you need to look at, and then you close out of it. And now it gives you your prompt back. So that might would work. That might would work. I haven't tried that. That might do it. But that's one of the other little gotchas. So that's how we see our changes. And either way is acceptable. There are times when you want to use the log, and there's times when you want to use git k. So here's a slightly bigger version of it. And again, the other cool thing here, remember when I did my commit, it spit out a portion of it? It actually shows me where that parent is. That was the commit for my initial commit right here. That's the parent of this particular commit message, the second one that I made. And like I said, it'll show you what the changes actually were. And if you have multiple files, you can go click on this side down each one of them, and it'll jump down and show you what each of those changes are. Yeah, it'll this side, it'll jump down to whatever that file is. This is a bad example because I only have the one change. But
is that number that big unique key? Is that like a hash?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. Okay, so that's cool. Gets keeping track of all of my stuff, and I can see what I changed, and that's great. I got my choice of how I want to see it. However, love my MacBook Pro. It's awesome. One small snag when developing with a MacBook Pro. DS_store. You're going to have a whole bunch of these files floating around all the time. And they have nothing to do with your code. They have nothing to do with your project. It's operating system specific. Other times, you can run into a snag. If you use, I've got an older project where I think at one point I opened it in one of the WYSIWYGs, like Dreamweaver, probably opened it in Dreamweaver and made a change. Because I opened that .htm file, it made a temporary file with the tilde at the end. Well, Git's going to keep track of that too. And I don't want it to. That's not any fun. So what Git ignore does is it's a hidden file on there that tells Git, don't pay attention to these files. You can even specify a directory. We did, the last place that I worked at, one of the things we did was process these text files. Well, once we're done processing them, we don't need to do anything else with them. I certainly don't want Git to keep track of those. So it was hard-coded to go look in the data folder to go find that. You can specify the data folder in gitignore, and Git won't pay attention to anything in there, which is good because it's constantly changing. I don't need Git to keep track of that. So gitignore is kind of useful, and you can put in anything that you want in there. And that's what's kind of cool about it. Okay, so now Git's working kind of the way I want. I'm cruising along, doing my thing, and I screwed up. How do I undo it? Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. Git revert. Git revert will let you undo back to a certain point. In Windows Server, they've got something called previous versions. This is sort of the same thing. One of the other cool things is, remember, as part of our workflow, we are making changes to our code. We are saving it. Does undo work across a save in your application? Maybe. Some applications, yes. Some applications, no. Most applications, no. Once you hit save, that's it. There is no undoing your change. Okay? This will undo it. I don't care when you saved it. You could have saved it 2 months ago. This will undo it. The way that this works is git revert, and you put the first 6 or 7 characters of that ID in there. So how do you find that again? Git kall or git log. And you can see, okay, here's where I want to go back to. Or you could say revert back to the head of wherever that branch is. If it's really bad, because it'll happen, you can do a reset. And you are resetting, you're resetting the head. And the head is sort of a special, it's something within the mechanics of how Git works that's kind of important. A little beyond the scope of this, but you can reset where the head points to. Two versions, soft or hard. If you do soft, it doesn't alter your staging index, which is doesn't matter because staging is all temporary. It doesn't alter your working directory either. That might be important because there may be some changes that you still need to make that you really don't want to redo. If you do a hard reset with a dash dash hard, that destroys that. It makes your working directory match your repo. All those future changes are gone. If you don't specify soft or hard, you just do git reset and you pop in that SHA-ID, what you get is a mix of the two, and that is the default. So if you're going to go pull the trigger with git reset, I would, if it were me, I would more than likely do soft, preferably, and I would be gender specific about it. I wouldn't let it be the default. So that's the thing about revert.
Sorry, how does it go potentially from, what do you define as a mix between the two?
That I'm not really sure.
Okay.
That's a little more of the inner workings of it.
Okay.
But it is a combination of the two.
Okay.
So okay, so up to this point, everything that we've been talking about is just changes on your machine. That's it. There's not been anything else. But for Teams, that doesn't really work. For Teams, you need remote repositories. And this is where Git really kind of shines. This is the distributed part of how Git works. If you want to see your remote repositories, you can do git remote dash v. And that will show you what your remote repositories are. If you want to make one, then it's a little bit wonky, but that's okay. On your remote server, go make a directory for whatever your repository is. And then once you change inside of it, do git init dash dash bare. What you're telling it to do is, look, I know this is empty, but I want you to keep track of changes. Because this is on your Git server, after all. Okay? On your development machine, go to your folder where your project is and do git remote add whatever the name of your remote is. And here, you know, you can be descriptive if you like. Doesn't matter. It makes a little more sense for me to do it that way. And then you put your username at and whatever your host name is, colon, and then where that repo is going to live. If you're using GitHub, the syntax is a little bit different. It's going to be git remote add. I called it GitHub so that I know exactly where it's going. And then you put in the web address of where I created that repository at with your username on GitHub. So you're still getting the username in there. So the interesting thing about the remote repositories, where is that one? Which one am I using? I'm going to use this one right here. So this is a project that I was working on, and if I do a git remote dash v, I actually have two. I have my Git server at my house, and I also have it on GitHub. So I have this in two different places. Now, why would you do this? Very simple. If I'm working with a small team of developers, and I want to maintain some control before I actually push out production code, then I might want them to go to my own internal Git server first. Because it's going to exist on everybody's machine, okay? But I want it to exist on the server so that everybody's got access to it. But when you're ready for the world to see it, maybe it's a website, maybe it's, who knows, then GitHub is ultimately where it's going to go live. And you can push to one and not the other. So, in fact, this is probably going to go here. In fact, my master branch is currently, and I did something that I did not do something that I should have done, but that's coming up in the next slide. But as of this point, my master branch is synchronized with the master branch on my Git server at my house. However, I am two commits ahead of what's at GitHub. And this is the nice thing about using GitK, is that it will go and show you this in graphical form. Question? For GitHub? Yeah, you could do. It would still work the same if it were a private repo. But yeah, if you didn't want to do your own development server, absolutely. I'm just saying that's an option if you wanted to really maintain some control. Because, I mean, what does hardware cost? You know? If you already have a virtual environment, you spin up a virtual machine, make your own Git server internally, and go on with life. You don't have to pay GitHub anything, because Git doesn't cost anything. So, but yeah, you could do that. You could just do private repos on GitHub and do it that way. So this is kind of cool. There we go. All right. If you're at the point where you're doing remote repositories, you're probably going to need to start doing something with branches. And branching is good. It's confusing, but it's good. And here's why. You're starting to put, your idea has come to life, and you're starting to push production code, and you have a product. Yes! This is awesome, right? We have a product. The money's not here yet, but by God, we have a product. Okay, that's awesome. What happens next? You got bug fixes. As people start using your product, they start reporting issues. All right, well, we expected that. You know, anytime you make a change, something's bound to break. The second problem is that as time marches on, you start getting itchy and you're going, man, I got so many good ideas for version 2 of my product. Or maybe 1.1, you know, however your versioning numbering is. And so you start working on that. These are features that didn't make it into the first release, right? That's great. But you're still doing bug fixes. And then what happens? Well, Microsoft comes out with Windows 10. It just breaks everything. This is great. This is awesome. Or, you know, it's... Well, I'm not going to say that. So... This is the point where you want to do branches. When you start getting that itch, that bug to go, I want to start working on the next version of my product, stop and make a new branch right then and there. How do you do that? Git branch and whatever the name is. If you're working as a team, because we don't want to push broken code up to our server, for our teammates to use thinking it's good code, you're probably going to want a development branch. And you don't have to call it develop. You can call it development. You can call it dev. You can call it Ooga Booga. You can call it anything you like. It doesn't really matter. However, keep in mind, everybody can see the branch name. So if you hate your new boss, don't put your branch name as my boss is a raging idiot, because everybody's going to see it. Then he'll have a new employee. If you want to use a different branch, Git checkout, and then whatever the branch name is. And it flips around. Pretty cool. Interesting thing about this, though, Git is pretty powerful. It ties into your operating system. Your files will disappear. I'm not kidding. I got a good example of this. Let me go find which one it is. That one. Okay, so I want to see what branch I'm on. And I am on, I have two branches here. I have a develop branch and I have a master branch. And the asterisk is on master, so that is the branch that I am currently on. Now remember, way back a little while ago, I said here's the workflow, and step number one is ensure you're on the correct branch. This is where it becomes true, right here. Make sure you're on the right branch. Your master branch is code that works. Your develop branch is code that doesn't work. So, if I do an ls on this, it shows me my master branch has all these smattering of files. All right, cool. If I do a git checkout develop, okay, so I have some changes to these commit files or checkout. Okay, that's actually rather interesting. Commit your changes or stash them before you switch branches. I made changes and I did not commit them. Since I do not know, it's been a while since I've been in here, I don't know what those changes are, I'm going to stash them. Okay, so I stashed my changes, life is good. Oh, there's head. It actually told me where the head is, and now let me see if it switched branches. Okay, so I'm still on my master branch. Now if I do a git checkout develop, it's going to switch me to my develop branch. All right, so what's the difference? Quite a bit. I don't have as much stuff here. All this composer stuff, this composer.json, composer.lock, composer.far. Composer is a PHP framework. None of that is in my develop branch, which probably means that I was making changes in my master branch, which is exactly what you're not supposed to do. That's why I said pay attention to what branch you're in. So, wait a minute. What happened to these? I need these. Are you telling me they're gone? Kinda. They're not here. They're not in this branch. They're not in the develop branch. They are in my master branch. So, I can still get them back. All right. Let me see. What else do I need to do? One of the other things that you can do if you want to see your remote branches, you can do a git branch dash r. If you want to see them all, you do git branch dash a. Or if you leave the dash a off, it'll just show it to you anyway. So branching is kind of interesting. But best thing is make your changes, do your exploration, your experimentation, and your develop branch. Once you got all the kinks worked out, merge it to your master branch. And then if you're ready for a peer review or you're done with that little section, you're on to the next task, then you push it to your remote repo. Okay, so that's cool. If you want to create a brand new branch and switch to it immediately, they do have a little shortcut here. You just do a checkout and you do dash B and whatever the branch name is, and it will combine this step and that step at the same time. So I don't know how much time that saves you in terms of having to remember this, but there you go. If you want to delete a branch because you don't need that branch anymore, all right, that's cool. A dash D. We'll get rid of it. And then whatever the name is. Git merge. You've got all these branches. I've got my develop code. I've got all the kinks worked out. Maybe it was easy. Maybe it was hard. Who knows? Now I'm ready to go stick it in my master branch. Go because I need to go commit this so that my team can see it and either review it or use my code, because they need it for something else they're doing. And we only push clean code. So from your development branch in a clean state, check out your master, git merge, and then the branch that you're merging. That will go merge all that in there. Then you check out your development branch, and you go back to writing code. Cool. One small snag with this. This monster can come up quite a bit. We're telling this to merge this branch over here with this branch here. What if there are conflicting changes? Remember, Git's keeping track of all the changes in all these files. What does it do then? Well, you do have some tools that will do that, will manage your merge conflicts automatically. Usually, though, you're going to end up having to do this yourself, and this is where it gets really entertaining, because you're going to have these little angle brackets here in your document that say, they're calling attention to, these are the parts that I need you to look at. And you have to go sift through and figure out which change you want to keep. So remember when I said that a space counts as a change? That is maddening. Because now you're going to have a merge conflict, and you're going to go look through all the spaghetti code trying to figure out what changed, and it was a space or an extra line. So whatever, it's not really syntax. What's the word I'm looking for, Tom? It's relating to standards, your coding standard style. I knew it was an S word. Whatever your style guideline is for code that your team has, subscribe to it. Even if you disagree with it, unless you get to be the boss, then you get to change it. That's kind of how this works. But keep consistent with it. So one of the things that we got in trouble for a lot was extra spaces at the end of a line. So we got to the point that before we checked in code, we would go run an awk script to go look for extra spaces at the end of lines. And if we found any, we would delete them, because it just made things really rough. So merge conflicts are not fun, because you end up having to go figure out which pieces, parts that you need. So here's one area where centralized version control systems actually have an edge. If you have to check it out, how many people can write to it? Just the one. How many merge conflicts do you have? Zero.
Some systems you can have multiple branches, though.
Yeah, you could. And depending on what changes are made within those branches, you can still run into problems. One of the things that we were doing was changing our code base from Ruby to Xcode. And in the Ruby version of it, we had lots of files. I mean, this project was chock full of all these little files. And they decided they didn't like that. They wanted fewer files. So Xcode to the rescue, plus everything is all consistent. Life is good, right? Wrong. Because now we have to go write all these classes, and what used to be one line in Ruby is now 15 lines in Xcode. But it's all the same file. And when you have two people working on it at the same time, you get used to this a lot. So this is where, if you have a team, you go grab them and go, hey, come here. Which one is correct? Which one do we need to keep? What if your team is remote? Or they're complete strangers. They're contributing to your cool project. This is where that email address really comes in handy. So you can email them, you can IM them, call them, and go, okay, I'm trying to fix these merge conflicts. If you were to look at a Git log of an existing project, you would find, I would venture to say, a third of the commit messages are some form of fix merge conflicts. Because it happens. It just happens. And it's not any fun. It's not really an easier way to make it work. So now that we've got branches and remote repositories, we actually have a slightly revised workflow. And it looks a little something like this. And I didn't do this on my project that has two remote repositories. Because before I came here, I actually made another change and committed it to my Git server. This machine here is not aware of it. Not yet. Because I didn't do this step right here. Git fetch, origin is your remote. Give me the master branch. Put it, compare it against my master branch. If everything is fine, it's going to say that you're up to date. Awesome. So everything in Gitkol, everything is all on the same line, even keel. If it's not, then you're going to do a git pull so that you get up to date. So if you've been out of the office for a day, you're going to want to do these. You're going to want to do these two steps. In fact, if you're doing anything with Teams, you're probably going to want to do these anyway, because you don't know if somebody had a flash of brilliance or somebody had to stay late, or you just don't know. So make sure that you're the most up-to-date that you can be. Once your master branch is as up-to-date as possible, check out your development branch, merge that master branch, your corrected master branch, in with your develop branch. So now your master branch and your develop branch match. Then you start changing files. You do your test, you verify that your code works, and all of our little steps, the git add space dot, the git commit and your message, all of those steps are done right in here. When you're done, life is good, I got working code, check out your master branch, because you've been developing in your develop branch, merge your development branch into it, do code review if necessary, if that's part of your team's process, and it probably doesn't hurt every once in a while to do that. And then finally, you push to origin master. That's a lot. All right, so what's that look like? On this particular project, if I do a git fetch origin, if I can spell, oh, it doesn't like the name origin. Sorry, git fetch, git server, master. Okay, so it differs from the key. It doesn't like that. That's because one key is for outside of my house and the other is for inside my house. So that's why it doesn't like it. Am I sure I want to do this? Sure. What's my password for that? Okay. And if you use SSH keys, you don't have to put in passwords. But that's a little beyond the scope of this, too. So then it goes, hey, I found some changes. All right, cool. Now, those changes still exist on my server at my house. They're still not here. Because all I did was a fetch and say, go compare the head of my master branch here with the head of the master branch over there. So if I want it, I need to do a git pull, git server, master. Okay, everything spelled correctly. Yeah, I know about the key, that's fine. Ask for the password again. So if you're doing this, I don't know, 50 times a day, I promise you, go take the 15 minutes and figure out how to get the SSH keys in there. Your life will be much simpler for it. Now it goes and pulls it and says, hey, we had one file change. And so I created a file here called second test. All right. Now if I do a git k dash dash all, it's going to work for me. Tell me that I didn't screw this up. Yes, I didn't screw this up. Here's what I've got. My GitHub master branch is down here at my initial commit. I have not pushed any of the changes to it yet. So GitHub is way behind. My Git server master branch doesn't really have the latest either. My master branch here is probably the most current. And the goal, ultimately the goal, is to get all of these on the same line. Because if they are, then everything is in sync. But again, really crucial, only when it works. Don't push broken code unless you absolutely have to. Do not push broken code. So, that's cool. So that's our revised workflow. Fetch origin master, pull it, check out develop, merge develop with master. You're already in your master branch, then you can start writing code, writing new code. Okay, so this is great, and I'm cruising along, and I'm making changes, and we got our team thing going, and it's awesome. And then somebody says, dude, I really need this. I need this piece you're working on. Are you done with it? You're like, yeah, I'm almost done with every little subtask in this part of it. They're like, yeah, I don't really care about all those other files. I really need this part. Or you have, well, we see we have a solution for that. Sorry, wrong example. We have a solution for that. We just go commit the one. But what if this is an emergency bug fix and you're heavy into something on your other branch or whatever, or on a different bug fix that's maybe less important? You can stash your changes and switch to another branch. And in fact, it yelled at me because I needed to do that. I had uncommitted changes, so I stashed them. The command is git stash save, and then the whatever message you want, similar to a commit message. If you want to see those stashes, do a git stash list, and it'll show you that. All right, workflow stash. Which one was I doing this on? This was, I think, on there. Let's go see. Git stash list. Okay, don't have any stashes on that one. Git stash list. I do have stashes here. Okay. Of course, these are just test stashes, just for purposes of example. But it shows me what they are. The syntax is a little weird, though. They don't use that hexadecimal thing. Instead, it's stash at, and then in braces, and they start numbering at 0, then 1, then 2, da-da-da-da-da. So how do you know which one's which? That's what the message is for. Because now this makes a little bit of sense. And if you, once you stash your code, you fix whatever you have to fix, you commit it, I want to retrieve it back, but I want to see what stashes I have, because maybe I've had a couple of these. All right, so this will tell you. Most of the time it's just going to be stash 0. Okay? So to retrieve your stash, you do a git stash pop, and then whatever the stash name is. Now, pop does something kind of interesting. And if you're familiar with any sort of code, any sort of language that uses arrays, pop has some significance. It usually takes that last one off. It takes it out of the array. And that's basically what stash is doing. It's just making an array of things. So if you do a pop, it gets that change and takes it out of the stash. That's kind of convenient because you were going back to that anyway. You don't want to leave that stash in there. If you do, no big deal. Not really sure why you would want to leave a copy of the stash, but okay, you can. You can do apply. If you want to delete your stash, you can do a drop, and then the stash number, and then do a stash list to confirm. Or if you want to get rid of all the stashes, you can do a git stash clear. So I've got two stashes here, and if I say git stash pop stash at, that's a bracket, not a brace, let's do one. Okay, so I'm going to get rid of the second stash test here. And it says, all right, you're on your develop branch, here's your new file, stash.txt. And it dropped it. Now, it does have that SHA-1. It just doesn't display it to you. Now, if I do a git stash list, it only shows me the one. Where'd it go? Right there. It only shows me the one. So pop literally takes it off and applies it. All right, cool. If I do a git stash apply stash at brace 0 curly brace. It says, all right, you have a stash 2 test. Didn't say that it dropped it, though. And if I do a get stash list, it still shows it's on there. And if I want to get rid of it, get stash clear, because I am lazy.
What did the stash apply do?
Say again?
What did the stash apply do?
Stash apply takes that and applies those changes back into your working directory, but it leaves it on the stash. So you could reapply them later on. Like I said, I'm not exactly sure why you would want to do that, but apparently you can. So if I do a clear and I do a get stash list, there's nothing there. Which is fine. That's honestly probably the best place to be. Because really, stash is just temporary. You're only doing it because you need to switch branches to something else. To go do something else, and you've got changes that are not committed, and if you're not ready to commit them because it's way broken code, and you don't want to do that, stash is your friend. Very much your friend. Any questions?
So can you work with multiple branches?
Absolutely.
At the same time?
No.
But not at the same
no.
time?
No. You can't. Your team can, but you can't. Not at the same time. You could jump from one to the next to the next to the next.
So like if somebody else is working on a different branch, you can't pull in their, if they change, put their updates in and they check those in, you can't pull those in, you know, getting the main branch, their branch, and your branch.
Yeah, technically you can, but it's a poor workflow. Really what you should do is, at this point, because you've got a team, you should have a central server that it's sitting at. And they should push those changes that are ready up there. That's what should happen.
But it could be on their development branch. Like
it could be, yes.
But you can work with multiple branches as long as they push them up to the central repository.
Yes. Okay. And if they have their own... Now, if you wanted to be able to see somebody's develop branch, and this is kind of a poor way to work... We initially adopted this, and it got very, very confusing because you have your local master branch here on your machine. You have your local develop branch here on your machine. Then you have, maybe you have a develop branch up on your server and a master branch there. So the reason you would do that is if you've got junior developers, or you want to really have some measure of control. You've got somebody that's looking at that code and going, okay, this is really good, or, oh, we missed something here, and this is going to break something. You don't want those people pushing to your master branch on your server. So they'll push to the develop branch on that server. And then that person will do a code review and merge that develop branch on the server to the master branch on the server. You could take it even a step further and have each developer have develop branches on the server. And we did that initially, and it was way more trouble than it was worth. It was easier to just have a develop branch on the server. And that's what we went to, and it was much simpler. So you could see somebody's development branch, but there's really no reason to. Because it's stuff that's not really working. I mean, if you're trying to collaborate...
Yeah, well, sometimes you're coming out with a build with, like, 50 different changes, and you have a separate branch for each change, and then you're not sure what's going to go into the next build, so...
Yeah, but you wouldn't have that many changes. You wouldn't have a branch for each change. You would have a branch for a different version of a product. We were doing things that were time-based, so... Every semester, you know, whether it's spring or summer, no, we didn't do a lot in the summer. Spring or fall or winter, sometimes they changed bits and pieces of it, and we had to go change our code. We would do a branch for each of those. but you wouldn't have that many branches. Realistically, you'd probably only have maybe two or three at any time to work with, because too many and it gets way too confusing. So,
and I've worked on projects where we used a lot of branches and it worked out well because you're not sure it's a big project.
There. Right. Well, yeah, depending on the size of the project, that could be. Anything else?
How does it?
Go ahead.
So if you're looking at multiple branches,
okay,
how do you tell it which branch to look at first? Or
oh, you would just check out that branch. You do git check out, and then whatever the branch is that you wanted. So, but as far as gitkl, it's tracking all of them. It's looking at all of them, and whatever the latest commit is what wins. That's what it displays, and you can actually see where everybody's branches are at.
Can you look at specific branches or changes to a specific branch?
If you check it out, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and gitkl will show you all the changes that are made within that branch. Yeah, we just scratched the surface of what that'll do. Tom.
So I've heard similar presentations several times now, and it seems like maybe half the people are like anti-rebase guys, and the other are for rebasing. I don't remember why they were so anti-never rebase anything, right? So here.
A little beyond my abilities. Yeah, rebasing is definitely beyond the scope of this and not something that we ever did where the last place that I worked. But I have heard that is one of your options. You could do that and clean up some of what Git's keeping track of. So it has its merits, but that's definitely not something that you're going to do starting right out of the gate. Any other questions? Sir?
Version directories.
Version directories? I don't know that it does that. So, anything else? All right. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Cool. Good deal.
How you doing, man?
Doing well.
Hockey season finally upon us.
Yes, it is. Tampa Bay lost to Dallas.
Yeah.
Still stunned by that.
Well,
Red Wings. Yes, I could see
sure.
them losing to the Red Wings, but Dallas, come on!
All right, well, early in the season,
and they lost at one point it was 4-1.
Yeah,
they came back and they got three, and there was like 10 minutes to go, and I'm like, okay, they're one behind.
They're
gonna pull it out, and what probably happened, because I wasn't watching the game. What probably happened was, they went, all right, we're losing. Let's pull the goalie, get another man on the ice. And, of course, that's
sure.
about a 50-50 shot on the other team scoring.
Of course.
And that, I think that's exactly what happened. And they couldn't, with a two-goal lead, they couldn't do anything.
Fair
enough. But, yes, early in the season.
Awesome job.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Yes.
I've heard this presentation several times, but never as in-depth as that.
Oh, well, thank you. You would have hated the one that saw at Dragon Con.
Hey, by the way,
it was like an hour long intro to Git. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. The guy who was presenting it actually wrote the Learning Perl book, which was a happy little accident because I had the book with me. And I'm like, oh, dude, can you sign my book, right? So, and he started off pretty much about where I was and then right into, here's how electricity works. And I went, oh my God, okay. So my choice was, it's kind of like algebra class. I can understand it, or I can take notes,
or you can cheat
and try and understand it later. So I'm going to go with that option because that's the best option. And so that's what I did. And then when I started working with it, I went back and looked at my notes, and it actually did make a little more sense, but not initially. So this was I tried to do this from the standpoint of, I've heard about Git. It should be something that I need to know, but I don't know anything about it. So that's what I was shooting for, which is why I didn't include rebasing, because it's a fairly advanced.
We rebase all the time, right?
Now, is it a luxury?
So when are you rebasing?
Not doing work right now? Or is
every time you start an app branch. That's our policy.
Just wanted to show you,
it's a
luxury. We talked about this one option,
okay.
Stat option to see which files were changed on commit.
Oh, cool.
It's GitLog.
Oh, so it'll actually show you.
So, yeah,
I haven't restarted yet.
So. Okay.
Well, I'd love to help. Like I said, we work with developers as well as on
applications
as well as network infrastructure. So,
I would love to, Brian, in your,
if you'd be interested, just wanted to see
your career when you worked with Git. Did you guys have like a merge master?
I went to,
or you had to put it up for review, and that person was
interested. We wrote everything to the develop branch on our Git server.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then our project lead went and reviewed the code. And that's usually when we got yelled at for spaces at the end of the lines. When I got tired of her yelling at me, so I went, okay, I'm just going to go fix this now and be done with it. And that just sort of became part of the workflow. But then she would take and push it to master. And when we do a git kl, master was pretty far behind. It'd sort of leap up, and because she'd finally go have the time to look at everything and go, okay, yes, this is all correct. But I mean, our client kept changing little portions of the spec, and sometimes that was a simple change of change a regular expression. And sometimes it was, okay, well, wait, now they're keeping track of this, so we have to write a whole other class that does this, and now that's not so simple anymore.
So we have two merge masters. Are the kings of the code, right? So it becomes a point of contention. An engineer might want to get a really quick fix out, but they're like, well, we should just go ahead and do this while you're in there.
Right.
It's an interesting process.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to have a very senior person reviewing. Because once you push it and it's broken, then and especially if it's not a syntax problem, if it doesn't break the program, that's really bad. If it's a logical error that you committed but the code worked, that's really bad. So you need a senior person to actually kind of overview. You need an overseer.
It's a fine line for us. I work with Tom. It's supposed to be an agile environment.
Right.
Quick fixes. But oftentimes it turns into a little bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's why if you do a lot of commits, then it still makes the agile workflow work. Because you're making a bunch of small changes. When I was sysadmin at Brandt Info, their code team, their philosophy was, and he actually had to get them to start thinking in agile terms, was, okay, this week we're going to push this. Here's our list of features. What three do you want? Well, I don't want three. I want this. No. What three do you want? Well, what about the list? Well, it doesn't matter about the list, because if that keeps getting pushed down, then obviously it's not important. If it was important, you would have got it done in your two or three changes for the week. And so they're committing, working, building, they're committing a new build every week. And it was, for some of those guys, it was really hard to make that mental adjustment. To me, it made sense. But, I mean, you're not changing the world, like, turn around and, boom, look, there's a mall. It's, we have a wall. We have a big wall. It's all small changes, but everything works. So, yeah, it still works, but.
Good job, man. I appreciate
the. I was just going to say, he's actually going to walk in.
So try Justin's the route your merch tool with the ampersand.
So he's walking in and in.
Well, let's actually try that. Not stash. I need git k dash dash all, and we're going to do an ampersand at the end.
Donuts, bagels, Chick-fil-A, what do you guys want?
Oh, man. That's actually pretty good. That works.
What do you want, man?
Donuts it is.
It pops it. It returned it back to me, so I can do a git status and do whatever I want, but I still have that. That's good. That's a nice workaround. Would not have thought of that.
But he starts Monday at 9, and I'm not going to be able to walk in. I'm actually walking somebody in
Philip, where is my master branch? Wow, my master branch is way down here.
I used to work at very large projects, and we had a zillion branches.
Yeah.
So every not developer, but people that would be working on a particular fix or update of a separate, and they can have like 75 different branches.
Wow, that's a lot.
These are huge projects.
Yeah.
I mean, they were
yeah.
huge. I mean, they had hundreds and hundreds of Dell developers.
Right.
They might have 500 developers on it.
Yeah, that, and everybody's develop branch shows up.
Everybody's develop branch shows up. They check.
Plus,
but then you,
every other branch. Oh, this would be a nightmare.
And then for your next release, you have a new branch, and you merge all those
right.
things into the development branch from the individual
right.
ones. And then...
That's some serious code review.
Yeah, it's a lot. They're huge projects. I mean, they were
yeah.
gigantic projects.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, see, this master branch is so far out of date. When was it? When is that one?
Do they have things like triggers and things like that? So if you like, check things in or out, it'll make something. So like another employee was using, they had
I'm not sure.
For, you know, pre and post-op type triggers. So the post-op, if you do something, it'll trigger something after the fact. Or
right.
pre-op to make sure that you're doing something.
I'm not sure.
Standard.
I'm not sure if Git has that. That's, if it does, that would definitely be a very advanced feature.
Well, that would be like
and
a
that
thing
may be,
for like your style checking for make
right.
sure the code doesn't, you know, it's it far conforms to a certain
and that
style
could be now because there's different utilities and Microsoft had they used to have something called Visual Source Safe and now they've got I think their reigning product is Team Foundation Server and I know that there's a lot of let me check out that file and it may do something along those lines.
I guess I don't know. I kind of figured this stuff is more like Unix or open source based.
Oh, this
yet,
oh this is very this
yet,
this is actually written by
Linus.
Yeah.
yeah. So
because he hated the change that the one who was using they went to closed source.
But just like
I'm not sure. Brant used it. Brant used Team Foundation. So
thank you, Brant.
Not
thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, good deal. Well, that's sort of the goal.